Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 139, recorded November 12, 2012.
Greetings, AquariMaxers.
Hello, once again.
So, thank you to all of those who responded to my shout-out earlier today. And who have we got lined up?
Well, we have Kelsey in California, Ryan in Texas, and Mick in Carnforth.
Carnforth, UK, right?
Well, yeah, but I think everybody knows that by now.
Well,
our show will put Carnforth on the map because everybody now knows that Carnforth is in the UK.
Yeah, I think it was already on the map.
Well, okay, but people know that it's on the map now.
I mean, people who...
People live, outside of the UK.
Well, that's okay.
I'm sure people inside the UK already knew where it was.
Okay.
Us ignorant Americans who didn't know where it was.
Okay, I see what you're saying now. Okay, so...
Are you going to give us a beta update first?
Oh, yes,
though?
I should give you a quick beta update.
Yes.
Okay, the main thing to tell you is that I'm working on a video that by the time you hear this should be on YouTube. Basically, it's a video that starts out from the building of the bubble nest and having the male and female together all the way up to the babies now in, well, you know, they're not really babies anymore. They're almost 15 weeks old. Or they are 15 weeks old today, actually. So it'll be basically covering that time period.
So it's pretty cool.
So it's kind of fun. Just a few seconds from each stage so you can see them develop. So please check that
out. Some of our favorites of the males.
Yes, and it will be, and some of the footage will be footage you've seen before, and some will be never before seen footage in the extended version of the beta breeding project. So
does it have DVD extras?
It has Easter eggs.
Does it really?
No, but that'd be cool, so I had to say.
Has fish eggs?
Yeah, it does.
There you go.
That's almost as good.
Does it have subtitles?
Well, it's going to have like captions saying the ages of the fish at particular times, and it's going to have vocal commentary.
Oh, there you go. Director commentary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, what about like surround sound?
No.
The THX or?
No, but we could have a little thing you click on and the whole thing will be in Italian. We could do that.
Oh, that would be neat.
I don't know if we will, but we could.
Anyways, okay. It will be fun. Excuse me. Okay, should we go to Kelsey?
Yeah, in California.
Kelsey in California, she says, I have finally upgraded my lighting system to an Odyssey Dual T5 setup, total 48 watts, from a T8 17-watt single bulb fixture. I was so excited at first, but now I have brown algae, she says, was leaving it on too long for a week or so at the beginning. My plants are still dying, and my rummy-nosed tetras go into shock every time I turn the darn thing on in the morning. Any wisdom? And then she gives some more details on the tank. She says, I have a 29-gallon, less than half planted. It has water wisteria, some Amazon sword, some bacopa, and a moss ball that are in layered eco-complete fluorite and a top sand layer. And she wants to know, is it too late to control the algae with good lighting schedule? Is there something I can put in the tank to help the plants but not the algae? Would root tabs work?
And she says she's got the light on 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's solve the easiest-to-solve problem first.
Okay.
The rummy noses going into shock every time you turn the light on in the morning.
Is that because it's too bright?
It is a pretty bright light. But it's not so much the brightness of the light that's bothering them as it is the suddenness of the light, I would hazard to guess.
How do you turn it on gradually?
That's a good question. You can't turn the light on
itself. Because it's not like one of those... It's not a dimmer bulb.
Right. Although most fluorescent lights... Well, that's the thing. Most fluorescent lights are actually dimmer when you first turn them on.
They flicker.
And then they become... Well, even if they don't flicker, like a compact fluorescent, it's particularly apparent on. They're not as bright for a couple of minutes, and then they just gradually brighten up. Mm. But with a T5... T5s are pretty bright. The thing is, you can't gradually turn the T5s on, but what you can do is either have a... You can have a dimmer light... That doesn't have to necessarily be associated with the tank directly, but in the room, turn on
first.
On a timer or manually. Yeah, beforehand.
So like a lamp that's near the tank.
A lamp that's near the tank could work, or you could do a moonlight, LED moonlight,
mm-hmm.
on the tank. actually install it in the tank and have that come on. Mm-hmm. Maybe half an hour beforehand, so the fish have a chance to wake up.
They
and
have a little
light.
Sunrise.
Right. Some people, I'll actually set up their tank in three stages, like people with really bright lights. They'll set up one so that you have, and this even for terrariums and things like that, where you'll have a LED nightlight, moonlight come on for an hour or so, and then you'll have your fluorescence come on, and then you'll have your metal halides come on.
Wow.
And then you'll reverse that at night, mm-hmm. so they're not plunged
brightest
into darkness.
Brightest ones go off first.
Right. So I would recommend doing something simple like that, not necessarily spending a whole lot of money. You know, you just use an ambient light in the room and on a timer, or a night light near the tank, depending on how dark it is in the room. But that will typically help. If they will become more accustomed to that, and they'll even begin to anticipate the brighter light if the other light is at a predictable schedule mm-hmm. prior to it.
So it's not such a big surprise.
Right. And now, if it happens that the room is already fairly brightly lit and it's only the light coming on, even though the rest of the room is already brightly lit that's bothering them, that's a different issue and harder to solve.
What would that issue be?
Well, that one I'm not sure what to say about, honestly.
Do they make little fishy sunglasses?
Not to my knowledge, but if you want to put it together, a prototype, we can start selling it.
Okay, so let's go to the less easy problem to solve then, the algae. She says she has brown algae.
Yeah. Now, what she mentioned, that she was leaving it on longer than 12 hours for a week or so at the beginning. That definitely be a contributor to a problem like that. But there are some other issues here, too, that we might be able to address, at least to some degree. One thing is, it's a 29-gallon tank, and the typical profile of a 20-gallon tank is a high tank. Mm-hmm. So the plants aren't getting as much light as they would be as if it were a long
tank. Because they're further
tank.
Away from it.
Right, like a 20-gallon long, or even a 20-gallon high, because a 29 is such a high tank. So
is that what we have our goldfish in, a 29, or is
no,
that
it's a
30?
37.
It's
a 37, but it's the same footprint as a lot of 29s.
Okay.
Same footprint. Because it's so high, the plants aren't going to get as much of that light as they would otherwise, but even then, at least some of these plants should be okay, because, Amazon swords are not particularly, you know, light hungry, so that should be bright enough to do something, and the moss ball don't need a ton of light either. The others need a bit more, and so, you know, they need to be fairly close to light to do really well. So that's one thing to think about. But it's not the whole picture, because I think you could probably get the water wisteria in the Amazon, in the Bacopa, to grow a little better, even with that situation.
Is there some way she can elevate them, you know, if they're attached higher up on a piece of driftwood?
There are ways to do that. Mm-hmm. And water wisteria and Bacopa being, you know, they're not like a rhizome plant, like a Java fern that you can attach, mm-hmm. or a Nubius that you can attach to driftwood like that. But there are things you can do. I mean, you can put pots with substrate in them up higher in the tank and so on, or you can put terraces in your tank. There are things you can do. But I'm guessing that you could probably get the plants to do a little better even without doing that. But here are a couple of things. One is, you mentioned that tank is less than half planted. So that probably means that there aren't enough plants to outcompete the algae.
So she needs just some more plants.
Yeah. And another is that the plants probably need more CO2 than they're getting. That's my guess.
Is that also because they're further down? Or?
Well, basically, all other things being equal, plants need enough CO2 to do well. Most plants need CO2 dissolved in the water or some sort of carbon supplementation to do really well and outcompete algae in high light. Okay, so I would say a couple of things you can look into. Like Flourish Excel, which is a carbon supplement we've talked about on the show, a liquid carbon supplement. It's not quite as good as injecting CO2 into the water, but it does help.
It's a lot less complicated and a lot less work.
It's a lot less work.
And a lot less stinky.
True. If you grow your own with the yeast recipe, whenever you open those bottles, it really stinks.
Yeah, it does.
It just does. I can't say anything about that except that it's true. So, but I would recommend at least thinking about doing do-it-yourself CO2 because it's fairly cheap. It's not too difficult. We did do a podcast on that. Or even look into doing these days. It's fairly easy to get a CO2 system where you don't have to grow your own. You just get your own pressurized at the paintball shop.
Really? Is that, they don't sell it at the aquarium store? Is it a paintball shop?
Well, you can get them at the aquarium store sometime, but paintball stores will have the canisters pressurized.
That's what they shoot their...
Yeah.
So, does paintballing smell bad?
No, because it's CO2. It's not made with yeast.
Oh, okay.
What you smell,
I didn't know, because I've never been paintballing.
Right, but when you open the CO2 from yeast, there are other things going on that you smell. Mm-hmm. But the CO2 in the paintball canisters is pretty pure.
Sorry, that was a little tangent.
No, and there are other sources too, but you can get a kit that will accept paintball canisters or other kinds, like the kind used for drinks, for carbonated drinks and stuff as well. So there are a couple of different ways to do it, but a lot of people use the paintball ones. They're fairly cheap. In the long run, they're actually cheaper than doing do-it-yourself. It costs more at the outset.
But. Why, but I just find that amusing.
Well, it's kind of funny. But it sounds like she's got a great substrate. Kelsey's got the EcoComplete and the fluorite, and then some sand on top of that. I mean, assuming that's a few inches deep, you can't really do any better than that. That sounds really nice. So
that's good.
I don't think that's a problem. And I think if you were to put the CO2 on, the plants would just do better and help. I mean, when I started doing CO2 the first time, it was like night and day. Just wham, the plants just started going crazy. And I've done it many times since then, and it really helped. So it's worth a thought. Right now, I dose two tanks with Flourish Excel. I'm not running any do-it-yourself CO2 right now, but I do dose two tanks with the Flourish Excel. One of the tanks is doing really super great. I mean, you look at it, you don't see a speck of algae. I'm sure there's some in there, but you just don't see it. And it's a nano, it's 5 gallons, planted with Java moss, Java fern, what else is in there? Some dwarf anubias, and it's lace Java fern, so it's a smaller type. And then it's got a bed in there and some wild cherry shrimp, and then one olive nereide.
Which one is it? Is this at work?
At work, yeah. And did I say a bed already? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's doing great. And then the one in our room is the Beta Sorority with quite a few different kinds of plants, and I'm also dosing CO2, and I've just put a new light on it, and I'm experimenting, trying to figure out the balance, and I'm having some algae issues right now, a little green hair algae. Thing is, I can't put any shrimp in there because the betas would murder them. So
yeah.
I'm experimenting that. I think I'm going to reduce the photo period now. So I knew that if I put do-it-yourself CO2, it'd be easier, but I'm just not going to do that right now because I don't have time. But anyway, there are some ideas. I wouldn't actually increase the nutrients yet until you, except for CO2, but I wouldn't put the root tabs in quite yet because it sounds like what you've got with the substrate is probably going to be okay for a little while. The Amazon swords will need root tabs or something similar later on. I guess I don't know how long you have them in there, but they are heavy root feeders. But the rest of the plants will do fine just by what you've got in there, although you may need to start dosing liquid nutrients later on, but I'd say start the light up first and see what that does. But you might need to dose something with potassium and maybe iron in it. Iron probably not so much, but for example, my tank at work recently, just to give you an idea, recently I changed the livestock. There were some frogs in there, the African dwarf frogs, and they're kind of heavy eaters and wasteful eaters, and so I was getting enough macronutrients in terms of phosphorus and nitrogen in there, and there wasn't a bit in there, and everything was fine. When I was dosing, I had the fluorite in the gravel. It's something like 50-75% fluorite, the gravel in the tank. Mm-hmm. And then I was just dosing with potassium, and that's it, nothing. And it was perfectly fine like that. Took the frogs out, put them in a different tank, put the bed in there. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeding a lot less food. Okay. But after a few weeks, I noticed that the Java fern was starting to get a little too pale. I thought, oh, that's not okay.
It wants its messy frogs back.
Yeah, and so I started dosing it with Flourish Comprehensive Plant Supplement every a couple times a week, and bang, everything
was
happy.
Fine.
Happy as clams. Within a couple of days, everything was happy,
funny.
And it's doing great now with that. So I alternate. I dose Flourish Excel every day, and then I do the Comprehensive Plant Supplement once or twice a week, and the potassium on the other days. Works great.
Let's go ahead and take our break.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nelly.
Is there anything else you want to say to Kelsey before we
move on? Let's see. Hopefully that gave her some tips that may help. Let us know if you try out some of those things and if that helps. One more thing I should say. Because you don't have that many plants, I would beef up the stem plants in there. Put something in that grows really fast.
Like what?
Let's see. Water wisteria and bacopa, they're stem plants, they grow fast, but you may need more plant mass, so you could do that.
Just more of them, those same kinds. Right. So don't they, you said they have to be up higher. Is there something that would be easier to place on the bottom that would...
Well, there are a couple other options.
...serve the purpose?
You could put in some things like, something like guppy grass, which grows like a weed. It is a weed. Mm-hmm. Or, myriophyllum or something like that. There are a number of stem plants you could try. You could also do some surface-growing plants, like some frog bit, mm-hmm. that kind of shade... the tank a little bit and can help
soak up some of the light.
And they get atmospheric CO2, and so they're not competing with other plants in the tank for CO2, and they can grow fast and kind of suck up some of the nutrients. Then you just export the nutrients by taking the plants out of the tank.
Okay.
And so that those are some ideas you could think of. The increasing the number of stem plants you got in there may be of use to you. So hopefully that helps, and let us know how it goes.
Good luck.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Okay, we also heard from Ryan in Texas.
Yeah.
And he says, you could give us a breakdown of what tanks you currently have, size, setup, livestock, plants, and why you did it that way.
I like this one. This is a good one. Thank you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Ryan has contributed before, so... Welcome, Ryan.
The name doesn't look familiar.
Okay. And you mentioned he's from Texas, right?
He is from Texas,
okay.
Yes.
Good. Well, let's start out. We have... several things going on this week, so but I'm grateful for this idea. But let's start out by doing one today, and then we can just sort of space them out and do different
okay.
ones.
Yeah.
So I thought we'd do the goldfish tank. We started talking about it before.
The goldfish tank.
So how about we do that?
My favorite.
Yep. Kelly has probably mentioned before on the show that goldfish. If she had to pick one species of fish that she could keep in the house, it would be goldfish.
It would be goldfish.
And outside, koi.
Koi.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
So.
You're nice and zen.
Yes.
That's my why.
That's your why.
That's my why.
They're peaceful.
They're peaceful.
I remember when we had that cichlid tank in the living room, she said, the cichlids are really fascinating to watch, but they're always trying to beat the tar out of each other.
It's not very peaceful at all. They shouldn't be in a living room. Cichlids should be like in a game room or something.
There you go. And this is our goldfish tank, okay? It's a 37-gallon high, so it doesn't have a very big footprint. Mm-hmm. And it's got, for filtration, it's got a BioWheel 220 on it and an AquaClear 60. I like to kind of over-filter.
Well, goldfish.
With goldfish, yeah. In terms of water changes, we do a 50% water change once a week, which seems to suit them just fine. They seem to...
Did you see how
it.
Many fishies we have in there? We have
two goldfish and one fairly young bristlenose pleco. One of the few fish that I think are good long-term companions for goldfish, as long as they don't become aggressive, because I have had individuals that become aggressive and I have to take them out. And then I replace them with a younger one. As they get older, they tend to get more aggressive, especially the males.
Yeah, people are like that too.
Yeah, and we also have an olive there, right? Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your words. I just realized...
It's okay, I was just saying old and crotchety.
I had neglected to mention we have an olive neurite in there.
Oh, yes.
Because this tank does get some light, some eastern, or not eastern, western exposure. It's far away from the window, but not so far that it wouldn't get some algae growth. But it actually does really pretty well with the olive neurite and the bristlenose pleco in there. You don't look at the glass and say, oh, there's algae on the glass at all, and I don't have to clean it off.
You just look at the tank and think,
Yeah, it's kind of a peaceful tank. Got a black background. Mm-hmm. It's got a couple of big patches of fairly large Anubias growing in there. Just Anubias bartierinana, but fairly big one. So it has the petioles on the leaves are fairly short, but they're not particularly small leaves. They're like, how long would you say that leaf is? 2.5 inches long,
yeah,
or something
about
like that, and maybe 2 inches wide. So, yeah, it's got some big patches of those in there. And let's see, mentioned the filtration, of course, don't need heating with the goldfish. The goldfish types, there's one calico fantail and one calico singletail, which is not always a good match.
He's mine.
Yeah, the singletail.
Well, I picked him.
You did, and you named him.
Yes, he's Paisho.
We've got black-eyed Susan and Paisho in there, and that, you know, a singletail and a doubletail are not always a good match.
I'm just going to say, if you know what Paisho is from, then you get points.
Yeah. They're a good match because black-eyed Susan is a very aggressive two-tailed, double-tailed goldfish feeder.
He's kind of a pig.
He eats a lot. He's a boy. His name is Black-eyed Susan, I know, but he's a boy.
It's a long story. It's not that long of a story,
but it was an accident. He was too young to tell at the time, and we had so many boy goldfish, and we have had so many boy goldfish.
Well, boy named goldfish,
yes,
that all turned out to be
most
girls.
Most of them turned out to be girls.
That we thought, well, let's name this one a girl name. And then we laughed and said, and it'll probably turn out to be a boy.
And
it did.
And it did. Because, you know, when you buy them in the pet store, they're usually not in breeding condition. It's not all that easy to tell them. We don't usually bother to check, but we want to give them a name right away. And then we find out later they come into breeding condition and you see, or they spawn or whatever, and there you go. But anyway, yeah, so black-eyed Susan. And then Paisho is also a male.
Mm-hmm.
And Paisho is not that aggressive a feeder, so they get along great.
No, his name suits him.
And their feeding response is about the same.
They get
usually
along well.
Single-tailed goldfish are a little bit more aggressive feeders, but
they're
not
kind of buddies
case
too. They hang out together all day and follow each other around. And
we don't have any food issues at all with them, so they're fine.
They're happy together.
Let's see, lighting on the tank. We've got a double bright Marineland LED double bright fixture, not the plant type, just a normal double bright fixture, which works great for that because we really don't need to do a whole lot in terms of illumination. I mean, it's good light to see the fish.
So there weren't really other plants we wanted to put in because the goldfish would just eat them.
Yeah, and the Anubias don't need a whole lot. They get plenty from the light from the window because that light doesn't really work all that well to grow most plants. But it's not needed in this case, so it works great to illuminate the tank. And, yeah, we're pretty happy with that setup. Got about 1/4 inch of large bore black gravel on the bottom. And, yeah, that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going pretty well and stably for a while. And we're enjoying that tank.
So thank you, Ryan. And we'll just kind of go through the rest of them, too. Maybe one a week.
Yeah, I guess we did kind of two today, didn't we? Because we did my beta tank at work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there so we go. You got a bonus.
Yeah, and we'll do some more. That was a great idea, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go to Mick in Carnforth in the UK. He says, "Hi, guys. Hope Kelly's voice is recovering now. Thank you very much. I can quite sympathize as I've had a mild throat bug, too, and I hope you're feeling better, too, Mick." He went to Aquatics Live this week, and he says, "Had a wonderful, if not mind-blowing time. Picked up some free swag, too, which is always a bonus."
Can we go to Aquatics Live next year?
I know. I think they ought to have you on, like, some kind of, I don't know, what do they have, discussion panels and stuff. They can pay our airfare tickets out there, and we'll just, like, take a little Aquarimax tour around the UK, and we can see Mick and our other UK fans and listeners, and it would be fun.
That would be fun. I would be all over that.
I've been wanting to get back to Great Britain since I
visited.
Flew home. Excuse me. Remains of my gold. Alrighty. There was a great biotope lecture from Heiko?
He's a German guy, so I don't know how to say it exactly. Heiko.
Okay, H-E-I-K-O. Bleher. He says, "My personal fishy hero." And very interesting one from Chris Lockup on Sulawesi?
Sure, that sounds pretty good.
Shrimp, crabs, and snails.
They have amazing stuff over there. Some of the new...
What's
a lot
Sulawesi?
Of them, it's an island.
Where?
Over in Southeast Asia.
Oh.
And they've got some amazing shrimp. Like sparkling blood red shrimp with white spots, and you know, that's just one. There's so many new shrimp that they came out of that place lately that have come into the hobby in the last few years. Rabbit snails that are like, they have yellow snails. Bodies or bodies with yellow dots on them. Stuff. Ooh. They look like giant.
You could do like a Alice in Wonderland themed tank or something.
Yeah, and they have very interesting crabs there too. They have, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that's one of the places where you can find terrestrial crabs, completely terrestrial crabs that reproduce on land. I mean, I shouldn't say completely terrestrial. I mean, they enter the water and so on. But what I mean is they're completely independent
from... Life cycle milestones are on land.
Yeah, all of the... they're completely independent of the ocean for reproduction. Wow. Unlike, say, terrestrial hermit crabs.
That still have to go back.
Must return to the ocean. They have a larval stage that lives in water. Okay, these crabs just... they release, you know, little crablets that are ready to go and live on land. So that's one of the places you can find some of them. So amazing stuff over there.
Cool. He says, we also had an interesting time at the reptile stands with good stuff from Mark Amy on venomous reptiles and John Barry on python morphology, not to mention the crocodiles of the World Rescue Center.
That sounds cool, too.
Mm-hmm. Says some really interesting tank setups on display and aquascaping contests and workshops on reef building.
Oh, yeah. He included some pictures, including a baby croc, it looked like. One of the aquascape tanks.
On the show page?
Yeah, so those pictures that
Mick, on Facebook
Mick sent us will be on the show page. Yeah, we should put them on Facebook as well.
Mm-hmm. He says, I am now trying to justify selling my car so I can afford to buy and run the super cool jellyfish tank, but I think this will just have to remain a pipe dream for now.
They did have a cool picture he sent of a tank. And most jellyfish tanks are kind of Chrysal tanks. You know, it's sort of a circular tank built sort of like a washing machine with a window in the front.
Right.
Sort of. So that the jellyfish don't get caught in the corners.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, it seemed to have some of the characteristics of a Chrysal tank, but it did have some 90-degree angles in there.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering how they did that. But he included pictures you can check out.
Currents encouraging them to go to certain places in the tanks?
I don't know. It could be currents that were pushing the way, but it was interesting.
How big does a jellyfish tank have to be?
Well, it depends on the species.
Because it just seems like...
And I guess we should say sea jelly rather than jellyfish, but, you know, anyway.
Oh, come on, jellyfish. Everybody knows what a jellyfish is. Even Julian Smith knows what a jellyfish is.
I know.
We should put a link to that on our Facebook. Can we put a link to that jellyfish song on our Facebook page just for fun?
Yeah,
okay.
That's
my request. You guys will all get to see that. It's great.
But anyway, yeah, a lot of people, I often use the term jellyfish, even though I know that the correct term is not, is just sea jelly. But anyway, the interesting thing about this is that nowadays there are people marketing more affordable tanks for them.
Where would you get them, though?
Well, there was one of my coworkers. His son at work has, his teacher ordered one of these tanks. So it's a fairly small tank, like between maybe 3 and 5 gallons, which water quality wise, I'm not sure how I feel about that. But anyway, being able to maintain the water quality doesn't sound particularly easy. But they have the tank, and it's got a simple sort of filter that has an uplift tube in the middle and an air stone in there, and it draws the air up. And basically, because it's a cylindrical tank, it sort of works like a Chrysal tank.
Mm-hmm.
And then they send you, after you've got the tank set up and you put the cultured, you know, rock work in and what all, then you put the, you get the jellyfish in the mail and pop them in.
Jellyfish in the mail.
Yeah. So,
I don't know, that's so funny. Jellyfish in the mail.
It is kind of strange, but it seems to, at least they got it to a point where they can market it. That doesn't necessarily
mean
it's a point
amazing.
Where people can maintain it, I guess, but... I'm sure Mick would be more than capable of doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And
totally.
It might be cheaper than selling his car. I mean, you know, it might be a more reasonable price.
So do you have links to
that
you
would mention.
Put up for him?
I can look. I don't know. I have any off the top of my head, but we can look. And it's probably not as cool as the one he's got in his picture, because that was a cool one. But anyway.
So his take on the conference, and I think he kind of sums it up here. He says, way too much for one brain to take in, but well worth the weekend trip.
Yeah.
Let's go next year.
that sounds fun.
He says, my quarry seemed to be responding to the new parasite treatment in the hospital tank much better now, so fingers crossed they've got the problem cracked now.
Yep, our fingers are officially crossed.
Yes,
yeah,
and fins crossed.
Finished.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fins, pinchers, chelipeds. what else can we cross?
Oh, antennae.
Antennae. Mm-hmm.
Pleopods.
There you go. Spinnerets. That's spiders. Sorry.
We can cross our rhizomes, too. Why not?
You can cross your rhizomes. I don't know if I can cross my rhizomes.
Okay.
Okay, I think that's everything. Oh, Mick's going to send us an extra program from the weekend exhibition program, nice. Which I'm looking forward to.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Mick.
Yeah. So thank you, Mick and Kelsey and Ryan, for writing in and asking lovely questions and giving us interesting news.
Yes, and oh, we got one more thing.
Oh, what?
I forgot.
So did I.
John, the web guru guy who always helps us out, he sent us a video of some some jellyfish or sea jellies and some comb jellies.
What's comb jelly?
They're not very closely related, but they look superficially similar. They're very interesting creatures. He sent us some video he took at the National Zoo when he was in Washington, D.C. Yeah, so we're going to put those up so you can view those videos as well.
Very good.
Thanks to John for sending those to us. He saw them there and he said, oh, you know what? That would make a great video for Aquarimax. So,
which was nice of him to think.
Yeah. And this is his first contribution on the air, so to speak. He has made many contributions behind the scenes.
Yes.
He does all the time. And so thanks to him for all of those. All right. May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.